Johnny's and Afric. It's Thursday, the 11th of April, and you're listening to Game On. Over the next hour, we're going to hear from Greg Allen, Bernard Jackman, Ron Nogara, Jeff Shepherd, and Mark Scannell to discuss the Masters at Augusta, a huge weekend of rugby, the life of OJ Simpson, plus the National League finals in basketball. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Bernard Jackman is with me in the studio. How are you, Bernard?
Great, thank you.
I know you're really looking forward to the rugby. We'll be getting to it in a while. We had Alan Cawley on yesterday, who said that the Masters at Augusta is his favourite sporting event, aside from anything football related. I know you're really looking forward to going to the Aviva this weekend.
Yeah, the Aviva's it's the most excited I've been about a match probably this year in the Aviva. Obviously the World Cup was brilliant, England away was and France away in Six Nations, but the home games weren't the same level, and this is a proper rivalry now, and it's so hard to call. I watched the last four games back yesterday, just clipping some clips for the pre-match, and I think 6 points is the difference in the last four games between them, and both games have swung, or the games have swung from one team to the other. La Rochelle's mental strength is incredible. I mean, that's, they just never know when to say enough's enough, and Leinster had them on the rack, you would say, twice. Didn't beat them last week. The Stormers were 13 points up at half time, 13-0, and La Rochelle came back and won, and I think that's the biggest thing that O'Gara will take solace from, is that this team know how, in a dogfight, they fight. Okay. And they've won those fights against Leinster.
Yeah, and I think everybody is really interested in the mentality and how they've been able to build it. We'll get into that in a little while. I have a competition to bring you first. So this week we have a great Aer Lingus competition. As the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team, Aer Lingus brings home advantage to every Ireland game, no matter where we're playing. And thanks to Aer Lingus, you could win a fantastic trip to London to support the Ireland women's rugby team against England in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. That's our overall prize to be won tomorrow. But thanks to Aer Lingus, we've also got a signed Irish rugby jersey to give away. We've got a few of them actually. For the chance to win a jersey, a signed one, and get into tomorrow's draw, just answer the following question. True or false? Scott Bimand is the head coach of the Ireland women's rugby team. Text your answer name and email address at 251552, and later on we will pick one person randomly and their name will go into the draw tomorrow. And just one important thing on our big prize, you've got to be able to travel on Friday the 19th of April. So don't enter if you can't get the day off. And as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all the details. We're going to be previewing the Women's Six Nations with Bernard as well in a few minutes. But now we're going to cross over to Augusta, to Greg Allen. Greg, you expected that there would be rain. How bad is it over there?
No, it's fine now. There was this expectation that there would be not just rain, but in a storm. There was a storm which was sweeping across Texas last night in the news. We could see the devastation of flooding that was happening in Dallas, and that was tracking towards this part of Augusta, or Georgia, I should say. Fortunately, it sort of skirted the city, so we did get a storm last night, but it was nothing like what it could have been. So there was only a 2.5 hour cleanup, so to speak. There wasn't a massive amount of rain by comparison to what could have happened. They were talking about 3 inches of rain. There was about a 1 inch of rain. And this particular piece of golf course property is the best technologically drained golf course in the world, I would say, certainly in terms of the electronics and the engineering that's going on. So they have a system called Subair, which is like a vacuum under the golf course. It just sucks the water down and distributes wherever it's needed into the local river, or Ray's Creek, as you know, around here. So that was very useful in terms of getting the golf course prepped. Of course, the golf course is a little bit softer than it might be, which means that the early scoring is really, really good. At the moment, there are no fewer than 5 players tied for the lead on 3 under par. And when you consider that we had this delay and the first man on the golf course was Eric Van Rooyen of South Africa, he did not tee off until 3:30 Irish time, 10:30 local time. So he's now just finished the 10th hole. He's the most advanced player on the golf course in that first group out. And he's also tied for the lead. He's just birdied the 9th about 15 minutes ago, parred the 10th, a very difficult downhill right to left hole, which many people will be familiar with at the start of the start of the back nine. And Eric Van Rooyen on 3 under par after 10 holes, tied for the lead with the 2016 Masters champion Danny Willett, who's 3 under after 8. He's just gone birdie-birdie on 7 and 8, the par 4 7th and the par 5 8th. So Willett, 3 under par, tied to the lead. Bryson DeChambeau opened with birdies on 1, 2 and 3, the LIV Series player. And Bryson DeChambeau using his massive ball striking to find the back of the second green, which was the par 5 there, chipped up to around 4 feet and hold that for birdie. On the first hole, he only took 3 wood down the first, and it's a 475-yard par 4. So that's all he needs these days to be less than a wedge, a full wedge from the green. A massive hitting by DeChambeau, almost driving the short par 4 third hole, and it literally fell off the green and went down a slope, but he chipped up to 7 feet and hold that putt. So DeChambeau, birdie, birdie, birdie start, and he's on 3 under par now playing the 7th hole. That's a difficult part of the course. From 4 through to 7 is a really tricky area. Just get through those holes in level par after a good start and you're well set, because then there are holes, as we know, on the back nine to make birdies on, which he can absolutely reduce to drive and mid irons, even short irons, the 13th and the 15th in particular. So DeChambeau, really not someone who's had a good record around here, tied for the lead on 3 under par, as is Ryan Fox, the 37-year-old New Zealander, who's the son of the famous All Black. I'm sure Bernard will remember him, and hopefully might even remember him playing, Grant Fox. And Ryan Fox is a very good golfer, and he was a good rugby player, but a better golfer. 3 under par, the 4-time winner on the DP World Tour, and now playing a lot on the PGA Tour. Ryan Fox tied for the lead through 5 holes on 3 under. And Ben Ahn, the Korean, who's a former PGA Championship winner at Wentworth, he's also 3 under par after 4 holes. So big tie for the lead on 3 under par, but it just shows how many birdies are being made. Interesting man alone on 2 under par, Christo Lamprecht of South Africa. He's an amateur player. He's 6'8" tall. He would make Bryson DeChambeau possibly look short off the tee if he really goes after it, because he's that long of a ball striker. And Lamprecht was the first round leader at the Open Championship last year in Hoylake, and here showing up on a leaderboard 2 under par, the amateur, through 7 holes. And that's the picture so far. And literally as we're speaking now, it's local time 1:09, and we're 1 minute away from Rory McIlroy teeing off on the first hole, and he's in very good company with world number 1 Scottie Scheffler and the world number 5 Xander Schauffele. A little later on, a couple of hours from now, Shane Lowry, at around 5 to 8, he will be teeing off alongside Ashke Batia, the winner last week, in the Texas Open. And they're off at just before 8 o'clock Irish time, just before 3 o'clock local time, 5 hours to sunset. And that's very, very time touch and go, really, that he will make the end of his round by the time darkness sets in. So he may get in. It's about 50-50. It's somewhere between 5 hours and 5 minutes and 5 hours and 20 minutes as to where the round will take in terms of time. So it could be that he'll get in, but Shane Lowry will be looking at the sunset all the way through the back nine, that's for sure. And Tiger Woods, certain not to finish his round today, because he's off at 9 o'clock Irish time, 4 o'clock, nearly just before 4 o'clock local time, and he'll only have 4 hours to sunset, and that means that he'll be resuming tomorrow. And for Tiger Woods, with his body being so sore with that car crash from 3 years ago, with those lingering injuries which have had an effect on his ability to walk golf courses, Woods, would you believe, has only played 4 rounds of a golf tournament twice in the last 4 years. So it's going to be hard tomorrow for him. He's going to have 22, maybe 23 holes or something like that to play tomorrow if he gets, hopefully, through round the 14 holes he'll probably get to play today. Remember, he didn't make it through the 2 rounds in the Genesis tournament in Los Angeles just a couple of months ago because of illness. So that's always a matter of wondering, will he finish? But his game has looked very good in practice this week, so certainly strikes the ball very well. It's the walking part that's the difficulty for Tiger Woods. So that's the picture at the moment. Big tie for the lead, which has now just been joined by Christo Lamprecht, who has just birdied the par 5 8th hole. So the amateur from South Africa, Christo Lamprecht, is tied for the lead with Erik van Rooyen, Danny Willett, Bryson DeChambeau, Ryan Fox and Ben Ahn, all of them on 3 under par, and they have a 2-stroke lead over the rest of the field.
Brilliant. Greg, thank you so much for bringing us all of that. I'd say it's going to be a good few days ahead. Looking forward to catching up with you throughout. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us, though. We'll be speaking to Jeff Shepherd about OJ Simpson, and we also have Bernard Jackman to talk us through all of the weekend's rugby action as well. 2FM. So for anybody who hadn't heard, OJ Simpson, that very famous American football star and actor who was acquitted in a very sensational 1995 trial of murdering his former wife, but he was found responsible for her death in a civil lawsuit and was later imprisoned for armed robbery and kidnapping. He passed away, it was announced today, at the age of 76. And to talk us through O.J. Simpson's career, his sports career, and just, I guess, the strange sort of legacy that he's going to leave behind, and it's one that's not going to be associated with sport, really. Is it Jeff Shepherd who joins us on the line now?
Hey, Marie. I mean, this is quite a sentence you had to put together there to talk about his life, right? I mean, it's unbelievable.
It really is. And he's probably one of the most famous sports stars in America. But, Shep, it isn't because of sport, really.
No. And if you don't mind me asking you a question here, Marie, could you just kind of maybe give me some context of, like, how popular or famous would OJ be in Ireland? I mean, I don't know about in the 90s, but today I'm assuming it's the first thing that everybody thinks about is what happened in 1995, right?
Absolutely. It's what happened in 1995 as opposed to what preceded that, because NFL, American football, wouldn't have had the eyeballs that it has now or maybe over the last couple of decades. So when he hit the headlines, it was the trial, it was the case, it was the car chase, it was all that sort of stuff. We were aware of American football. Bernard Jackman is here as well, but I'm not sure we would have had too many recognizable. We didn't know too many Tom Brady's back then.
Sure, right. So that was, you know, Chuck Klosterman, the American writer and podcast host, who was talking about OJ. And he's a wonderful writer and very eloquently kind of summed it up exactly what you and I are talking about. It's this two lives thing that we have to discuss when you talk about OJ. There's all of the things that happened basically before 1995, and then there's everything that's happened since then. And it almost seems like it's two different people. I don't know anybody who probably doesn't think that he did it, and you know, with his wife and Ron Goldman, and committed those crimes. But again, he was acquitted in the one of the most famous trials in the history of America. That and it's all kind of context too, Marie. You know, you have to think back. You know, in the mid 90s. Okay, so I was a young Jeff Shepherd high school student back then. Okay. And so we didn't have that's right. We didn't have cell phones in our pockets that gave us all the information in the world in 1 second. Television news wasn't what it is now in America. CNN and Fox News were kind of it, but they weren't really. It was the war in Iraq had kind of given CNN a big boost. But it wasn't like this omnipresent situation. And the OJ trial was just like nonstop, can't miss television. I mean, I was a senior in high school when the verdict was sent out, and we watched it in the classroom. I mean, everybody in America was tuned into this thing. You know, the white Bronco chase, they estimate 95 million people watched it. You know, it preempted one of the games of the NBA finals because it was going on in the middle of the summer. There's an incredible ESPN documentary that was put together about all the things that were going on around this time frame. The New York Rangers had just won the Stanley Cup and the OJ chase and the NBA finals and the PGA tour and all this was going on. It was just a crazy time in America that it was ubiquitous. You could not go anywhere, it felt like, in America for a solid year. And someone you didn't have an opinion on it. I mean, it's like no one was on the fence about this thing. You know, I mean, it was just, back when there was a monoculture, everybody was talking about this thing.
Yeah, it definitely went all around the world, like the trial and the car chase and everything that went with it. But what about his career as an athlete? But because from knowing that he was really good at pretty much all sports, and then particularly NFL and had a bit of a broadcasting career and all that sort of stuff, what was his capabilities on the pitch?
Sure, yeah. So he was a running back, kind of came into everyone's consciousness when he played in college at the University of Southern California, USC, led them to a national championship, won the Heisman, drafted by the Buffalo Bills. He becomes the first player to rush for 2,000 yards in a single season. And Marie, they play 17 games now. They played 14 when he did this. Okay, so, you know, the guy, very few people have done it, you know, since then. He did it. He was the first one to do it. He averaged 142 yards a game, I believe was the number I saw. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame 6 years after he retired in the early, he retired in 1979 and then was inducted in 1985. And then above that, again, you go back, you know, get into the time machine and go back to think about what was life was like back then. There's three channels. So everybody's watching the same thing. OJ becomes an actor. And he stars in, you know, he famously was in these car rental commercials of running, you know, running through the airport late for his plane. And, you know, you could quickly get a rental car. You know, he's jumping over luggage. And this is all pre 9/11 and stuff when you could like run in airports and things, you know. So, I mean, it's just, you know, just a completely different time and space. And then he gets into, you know, these different movies and TV shows. And, you know, most famously, he's in the Naked Gun movies, you know, with Leslie Nielsen and all this. And then all the stuff happened. I mean, he was one of the most famous people in America. It seemed like everybody loved him. Everybody knew who he was because, you know, he kind of came up in a time and a place where, you know, again, everybody was kind of watching the same thing. So you were just aware. You were much more aware of kind of everything that was going on. And then all the things happened in the mid-90s and it just goes, you know, goes crazy from there.
What about the last few years? What has he been doing? Because it seems like he was keeping quite a low profile.
Well, yes. So, you know, he had gone to prison, not for anything related to what happened, you know, with his ex-wife and Ron Goldman. He had been convicted of going into a hotel room in Las Vegas with some guys that had guns. And he had always claimed he was trying to get back some of his sports memorabilia that he said had been, you know, taken away from him. And so he was convicted and he went to jail. I believe he was in jail for about 9 years. He was in a remote jail in North Nevada. And then he had gotten out and, you know, I believe he was just kind of playing golf. He still had some friends. You know, I can't tell you, he was just walking up to strangers and introducing himself and he was befriending people. I don't really know enough about his social life to know that was going on, but, you know, he had several kids and, you know, he was active on, you know, X, you know, you'd see him tweet some things out or post things every once in a while. He had been sick and I guess, you know, several of his family friends had gotten an opportunity to come see him in the last couple of days. And he passed away yesterday. He had prostate cancer at age of 76.
Yeah, I think he's definitely somebody that people will be talking about for quite a long time because, as you said, he definitely ended up being one of the most famous men in the world, but just not for the right reasons. Before we finish up, Shep, I wanted to talk to you about Caitlin Clark because Iowa are going to retire the number 22 jersey. It's not something you see too often over here. I know that Birmingham did it with Jude Bellingham, but how big a deal is this?
Oh, it's huge. And I know, you know, we talk a lot about college athletics, you know, American college athletics, Marie. And I know it's, you know, it's a little kind of a cultural difference. You know, it's not such a huge thing over there. I know they have college athletics there, but it's not, you know, this big, you know, country, you know, the way we have it with ESPN and all these different things. But, you know, Caitlin Clark, I mean, just for a variety of reasons, I mean, she just she puts eyeballs on television. And we talk about that all the time, right, Marie? I mean, that's what we're in this business to do is to put eyeballs on television. And that's what she has done. I mean, look, you know, most points scored in college basketball, men's or women's, you know, all-time leading scores there, just the shooting records and all of that. I mean, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. I can't believe it took them, you know, this long after the season ended for them to make this announcement. You know, I mean, they probably could have announced it before the season was even over. But just a tremendous athlete. You know, she's going to have success in the WNBA. She'll be the, you know, obvious number one overall pick. But I mean, I don't think you can put a number on what it means to have an athlete like that in your sport. Look, you're not going to retain every single fan that tuned in. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I watched a lot of Iowa women's basketball games this year. I don't know if I'll ever do that again, you know, but I did it this year because of her. Same. But there are going to be lots of people who will now watch other women's basketball games that may not have done it before just because they like the product. They like what they saw. And you know, a lot of that is attributed to her.
Yeah, big time. That draft is on Monday, as far as I'm aware. But she's definitely the type of player. And I'll talk to Laura Lee, who works with us here. We might head over to watch her when she hits into the WNBA. She's that type of player that would attract fans to go and see her.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they're doing these things now, like with the NBA All-Star game. They have started to incorporate, you know, some of the WNBA players into like the 3-point shooting contest and the skills competitions. So she's not just going to just scuttle off into the WNBA. We're never going to see her again. I mean, I think she's going to be someone that's going to be involved in the American sports consciousness for a very long time.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing where she goes on Monday. Shep, thank you so much, as always, for talking us through O.J. Simpson, his career and his legacy, and of course for talking about Caitlin Clark. You're welcome to do that anytime with me. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us though, because Bernard Jackman is standing by to talk rugby.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Rugby. Yeah, welcome back. I mentioned that we would be previewing that huge game between Leinster and La Rochelle. It's been getting quite a lot of attention this week, and one of the reasons is because Ronan O'Gara has brought his La Rochelle team to Cork. Too much excitement and fanfare and interest as well. They've been out and about in a very rainy Cork, and they have been showing some of their exploits on social media as well, and people have been very interested in what they're up to. Well, Ronan O'Gara, who people are fascinated by, to be fair, he's such an interesting person and has done a brilliant job with La Rochelle that everybody wants to speak to him. One of the people that did was Tony Lean, who's the examiner with, or the sports editor with the Irish Examiner. He had a chance to catch up with him this week. Let's hear it.
There's a lot of intrigue and there's a lot of interest, Ronan, in terms of the strategy behind coming to Cork for the preparation. I would imagine it's the first time, certainly as a coach, you've ever prepped for a match in Cork.
We've been trying for years to get over, because obviously with my hometown and my fondness for Cork, and the boys obviously know all about that. We've been trying to bring them for pre-season camps, but I suppose with the way we've had late seasons and gone deep into competitions, we've never had the chance, because the first game or journée 1 of the top 14 starts 5 weeks after the final in previous campaigns. So it was always in my head to get over, and obviously over the years I've got to know John O'Flynn. So once John O'Flynn is interested in making something happening, there's no better man, and he's been brilliant, and he's made this week into a most enjoyable week off the pitch with world-class facilities, food, recovery. So we've been to South Africa already twice in this European campaign, so the reality is, people don't understand that there was, for me, from arriving in Paris to go to La Rochelle takes by bus 6 hours, by train whatever, 4+1. We need to train if we want to try and do the business at the weekend. So if we were to go back to La Rochelle on Monday, you get back there at 3-4 o'clock without having slept for 2 days. It means you couldn't really train Tuesday, and then one training session won't be good enough to compete against Leinster. So we said we come straight to Cork and train Tuesday and train Thursday and try and keep it as a normal championship week where we play knockout rugby on a Saturday. So in that regard, it was fascinating.
But you had it in your head, Ronan, obviously. You had it in your head like before Saturday. This was something where you said, if we get over Saturday, we're hitting straight for Cork from Cape Town.
Yeah, because you're trying to, you've 27 hours from Cape Town, Johannesburg, Paris, with flights and with internal flights and with waiting time. So for me, there was no point adding another 12 hours travel onto the week, just eliminate that. So we just said we'd go straight from Paris to Cork, and sure, it's important that you try and make it as enjoyable. There's no suffering in this game.
Yeah.
With the season the way it is, with the World Cup and Six Nations, we needed to tighten together.
Bonding, yeah.
Well, I don't know about bonding, because bonding is probably different and involves late nights. We haven't had late nights.
You get a sense, though, as well, that Cork has very much, I won't say embraced you, but really, really welcomed you. I mean, you were back to Conn to train, and I know you did a bit of kicking in Musgrave Park. You've ticked all the boxes in Cork, but I think they've been very receptive to having you and kind of sending you on
your way. I
don't
like the expression ticking the boxes. We never tick a box. We are very privileged. We enjoy what we do. We represent Stade Rochelais. I've come from Cork. I'm very proud. I've had the best years of my life playing in a Munster jersey, in Ireland jersey, Lions jersey. We're back home here to prepare for a game where we have a a good chance of progressing, where I think we've achieved a remarkable run of victories in knockout rugby, and we want that to continue. But yeah, we've been blown away by the support. It's been really surprising and top class, just meeting all the locals from Cork again. You forget that when you get unfortunately taken into your own little bubble and full of the importance of that on the whatever the west side of France. But it's been an unbelievably powerful week in terms of stirring the emotions, that's for sure.
And lastly, you had a night on McCurtain Street last night. You had a bite to eat and a few beers, called into an all few horns.
Yeah, we did, yeah, but sure, that's what it's about too. The great meal in Isaac's, and then we went to the Cork Arms, Shiné, and one or two other spots, and got well looked after. The boys were fascinated by the live trad sessions, and it's good that they're seeing Cork in its finest lights.
Rona Gara speaking to Tony Lean of the Irish Examiner. Bernard Jackman is with me in studio. Bernard, if Leinster people are listening to that and hearing that La Rochelle had a very powerful week and stirred the emotions, will they be worried about what La Rochelle is going to come from Cork to Dublin?
They're worried anyway if they look at the footage, and they'll have it in their mind, unfortunately. The disappointment and the physical impact that La Rochelle have left on them over the last four games, even the one that they won in La Rochelle in the group stages, that was an incredibly hard fought game, and it could have went either way. So this is a quality team. O'Gara, in fairness, is the master of communications, and he is, in fairness, logically what they've done is makes sense. I mean, to go back to La Rochelle and then have to travel again, it's a big part of French sport, this idea that for a big game you go into a kind of a camp mode, commando camp, stage they call it, and to be able to bring the team to Cork, and for him to show off Cork and all that. I think they will have a lovely week. I think it will build it up, and they need to. Like, their Leinster weren't brilliant against Tigers, but La Rochelle weren't much better against the Stormers. You know, and it's difficult to go to Stormers, but
yeah,
they went 30-0 down. They could see the try in the last minute, which if Manny Libbock kicks the conversion, they're out. But having said that, when you look back at their previous form, the reason Leinster went into the last couple of finals and semi-final before that as hot favourites was because Leinster's form was ridiculously good, and La Rochelle had a couple of little blips along the way. But yet, what they are, and this is what you admire in them, is they've been able to find that improvement when it matters. And they will have Leinster's respect, and rightly so.
Is there differences now in this Leinster team? Like, have they made the changes that they need to get over a La Rochelle?
I think...
Is it just mental?
Yeah, it is mental. And unfortunately, until you beat them in a knockout game, the fear is always going to be there. And look, it's La Rochelle for the last 3 years. But it was Saracens before that. You know, it's 2018 since they won a European Cup. So there is question marks around them. Not individually. Individually, they're all really good players.
Yeah. But
And they've been able to win in an Irish jersey. You know, but they haven't closed the deal yet in a Leinster jersey. And again, you know, last year was a brilliant opportunity having a home final. This year, if they win against La Rochelle, they play a home semi-final in Croke Park. That's been announced today and confirmed. And then you have the carrot of a potential final in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which by all accounts is one of the best stadiums in the world. And players, they talk about the process and stuff, but they actually like the idea of playing in these stadiums that they watch on TV and obviously for a European Cup final. So, and likewise for La Rochelle, only one team has gone three in a row, that's Toulon, and they've already written their history. First La Rochelle team to win a major trophy, then to go back-to-back. So for them, the carrot of actually going back-to-back-to-back and beating a team like Leinster in the Viva for second year in a row is phenomenal. So they're warriors. Like, they will, I've no doubt that they will come prepared. The challenge for Leinster is life post Sexton, and I know people are sick of hearing this, but realistically, like, I don't know who's going to pick the 10 tomorrow. You know, Ross Byrne.
Who do you think?
I think you go back to
Ross.
Very
rare now you don't have an answer.
No, I know. I haven't heard anything either. But that's why. But Harry played against them in when they played in the group stages. Harry had a good game the week before against the Bulls. Ross played against Leicester. Didn't really happen. He wasn't brilliant. He wasn't really bad, but he wasn't had a brilliant game. So I'd say that's a selection call. I think, and Nino Barr, his impact as a coach, I mean, his track record as part of the Springboks coaching staff, has always been to make brave calls, to think outside the box. To such an extent, they played Will Connors at Openside in that game in the group stages. Now, he hasn't really been seen since. He's had some knocks, etc. But it may come down to that. It may come down to making a brave call selection-wise and that working out and you win, or that backfiring and you lose.
So how has Ronan O'Gara managed to be able to, I'm going to steal a Jurgen Klopp phrase here now, and turn his team into mentality monsters?
I'd say he does it every day. I'd say he does it every day. And he signed players who had that. You know, Will Skelton, he had him on loan when Saracens got relegated. When Saracens got relegated from the Premiership, they sent a lot of players on loan for a year, and Rog took them and didn't let them go back. Basically convinced them to stay. And he's been a key part of that. Some of the players they've brought through their academy, likes of Aldreet, etc. Sometimes, it's part coach. You know, they might have a good sports psychologist, but realistically, it's those players and kind of how they're reared
near
to a certain extent. How they're programmed, you know what I mean? And are they people who can stay composed in the heat of battle? Are they people who will go that extra mile? I think he has a lot of them. He has a lot of them. And now look at it, I have to give him credit. He obviously has done a huge amount creating a mindset, creating that bond, connection, game plan, belief, because they wouldn't have had it before. They've no history in Europe until Ronan went there. So
amazing, Bernard, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. Like they lost, so they got to two finals the first year of COVID and got beaten in both. And everybody said, that's the end of them. It was a freak year. The big teams didn't play well because of lack of crowds, etc. Yeah. Everyone had an excuse for everyone else. And the heartbreak of actually losing two would finish them, and they came back stronger and won one and got to another final. So in both competitions, they go down to the wire now. And you'd love to be a fan of La Rochelle and be able to go see your team represent you the way they represent them.
Absolutely. So what are the key areas, do you think, that are going to be the battlegrounds?
The breakdown is absolutely massive, because when you look back at where Leinster struggled, La Rochelle are one of the few teams who could actually slow down Leinster's ball. La Rochelle don't mind giving away penalties. Their penalty count has been very high against Leinster, but Leinster have taken points and haven't been able to get away from them. Whereas normally Leinster go to the corner and turn Lisbon into 5 or 7. But against La Rochelle, they've tended to go take 3 points, and then La Rochelle score a try of their own, and the game is still much very much alive. So that's going to be really interesting. Leinster scrum looks to be improving. What Leinster do in terms of their second row partnership, do they go for Joe McCarthy and Jason Jenkins, for example, to give them that beef that they may need, but that maybe weakens their line out? Do they pick a back row of Conan, Doris and Ryan Baird and have Van der Fleer coming off the bench? There are all the things I think that they'll be talking about this week, but realistically it's whoever can. I don't think La Rochelle don't have to handle the pressure. It's can Leinster handle the pressure and overcome what's a bogey team for them?
Do you think they can?
I can't say with any real confidence. Like you would think they have to. Like when is enough? It's very hard to beat the same team 4 times in a row and knock out rugby. If they're anyway levelly matched, but that's what's ahead of Leinster. I do think Nina Barr will have a big impact. I think.
Seeing his impact?
Oh, yeah, we are. We genuinely are. We're seeing they're much more physical than they were.
I love the way I say that with disbelief.
No, we are. But actually, in actual fact, they're less flamboyant, they're less flashy, but they're equally as hard to beat. So they've only lost a couple of games this year, the first round against Glasgow and then lost to Ulster, where they got exposed a little bit for some of the kick space. But I think they say you shouldn't bring passion into sport, okay? That's kind of what I teach you.
In coaching school?
Coaching school, yeah. But I saw something from Chasing the Sun, the documentary about the Springboks, and Razzy Erasmus said, look, passion only lasts you 5 minutes, okay, in a game. But against England, Australia or New Zealand, if you're a Springbok, it'll last you 8 minutes, right? Okay. And look, if that's true, Leinster, if they have any passion, should last 80 minutes against La Rochelle, because effectively the disappointments of what La Rochelle have taken from Leinster over the past couple of years should lead to a lot of passion and emotion.
So what about the crowd? We're expecting close enough to sell out at the Aviva?
Yeah, I think ticket sales are phenomenal. Look, it genuinely is like a sporting game, whether you like rugby, that you could go there or not. You could go there and you should be enthralled by the contest.
Yeah,
by the contest.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it's been. And yeah, it's a sporting event as much as a rugby event, I think, because of the rivalry of two teams and the quality of players involved, and obviously the O'Gara factor. But more, you've got two teams full of internationals going at it, and only one team will go through to the semi-final.
And that semi-final, if it's Leinster, will be on at Croke Park?
Yeah, Croke Park, I think against, oh, it will be against either Northampton or the Bulls, regardless. So the South African teams don't get home advantage, even if they win. So it's definitely going to be in Croke Park if Leinster win. And I'm not sure the venue if La Rochelle win. But yeah, it's Northampton or Bulls on the other side.
Ireland are playing in the Six Nations as well. Actually, before we move on, just call it for me.
Leinster, but tight.
Okay. Ireland are playing Wales in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. It's down in Cork this weekend. And the big news line is that Cliona Maloney is going to make an appearance, you'd imagine anyway, because she is in the squad for the game. But what kind of a lift is that going to give the team, having a player of her calibre back?
I think it's huge. And obviously, Nev Jones has been going really well at hooker, but just gives them more strength and depth, particularly impact off the bench. And I think it's more than just her as a player. Yeah. I think it sends a message to all the players who are playing that they're going to be picked on merit in terms of ability, and that times are changing, and that the best players will get picked regardless of previous outbursts. Or and it's very harsh, because in fairness, I think. Everybody understands that things weren't right, you know what I mean? Yep. And she was being punished for calling it out. So she's back in. Look, obviously they're very disappointed about having lost to Italy, but it's still a very inexperienced team. I was looking through the number of caps, and they're very light on caps, which is kind of makes a good argument of why, or explains why they were maybe a little bit poor in terms of some of the execution or confidence levels or cohesion against Italy, because they put in a huge effort, could have easily won the game, and they're up now against a Welsh team who are on paper better than Italy, but not significantly better. And this is a chance to get a win, which I think would just confirm all and I suppose give them compensation for all the hard work that they've been putting in.
It's tough on them, Bernard, though, isn't it? Like, it's tough to stay motivated when it doesn't feel, or I guess I'm sure they feel it themselves, that they're making progress, but when you're not getting them results.
No, it is very hard, but like, there's 5,500 tickets already sold for Cork. You know, there was a great atmosphere in the RDS for the Italy game. You know, I think the majority of people who are following this team realise that it's very much early days in their journey, and they obviously want them to get a win, and the players will want to get a win, but unfortunately you're at international level and there's nothing given to you, so they're going to have to keep working hard, just kill some of the errors. And I think they could win this weekend. I think this could be the week that they get that W, and that will give them massive confidence, and they'll improve massively for a significant win.
How long does it take though, Bernard, to close a gap like the one that's between the likes of England and France and, you know, really everybody else?
Yeah, well, look, I think we can close the gap to Italy, Scotland and Wales, if not this season, next season. I do think we can. But the other gap, I don't know if we'll ever close that. That sounds very negative, but we're a long way off even getting closer to that, because they're not going to stop. You know what I mean? So that's the challenge. You would have to find a really good competition structure internally, or we accept that a lot of our best players, or nearly all our best players, like, you nearly want all your best players, which is all your internationals, to go and play in one of those leagues, I think, given the quality gap in this league. And then what's that going to do for the league here? So I would say you would have to try and find a way of really invigorating the league here, the pathways here, and that could take 4 or 5 years. And while you're doing that, the others aren't going to stop. That's I don't mean to sound negative, but that's just my good feeling on it, is that England and France have got such a run on us and have such a superior player numbers that it'll take us a long time to be able to get to their level.
Okay, Bernard Jackman, thank you as always for coming in. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us though. I did mention as well that we have a big weekend on the basketball front with the National League final. So Mark Scannell, the head coach of the Address UCC Glenmar, is going to chat to us about those two really big games.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to basketball now. It is the weekend of the National League Finals, and I'm delighted to say that Mark Scannell, head coach of the Address UCC Glanmire, joins us now on the line. How are you, Mark?
Good, Marie. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks a million for joining me. And before I get into the finals, I just want to chat to you very quickly about the weather and the facilities, because we were chatting last night to Martin Loughran of Crumlin United about how difficult it is for kids to get out and play football. But for basketball, it must be great that you can play all of the time.
Yeah, it's great that we're indoors most of the time. But funny enough, we're getting to the end of our season and the nights are getting brighter. And a lot of the younger kids go outdoors this time of year. So I suppose in some ways we are suffering a little bit. But like, obviously, most of the basketball is indoors. And especially like, you know, through the winter and the bad evenings and stuff, we're very lucky from that point of view.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's always good to highlight the good things as well, instead of always being focused on the things that the kids can't do. It's brilliant that they have basketball, and no doubt we'll be very interested in this weekend, because it's a huge, huge, huge weekend. So we're going to start with the women's game, and Priabel Colester and SETU Waterford Wildcats. Setu, how do you think this one's going to go?
Well, I think it'll be a close game. I think that Waterford have got really, you know, they've got stronger as the season has gone on, and they've had a very good finish to the season. Colester have been probably in cruise control for most of the season. They haven't been challenged too much. They only lost 4 games over the season. But I think right now, you know, Waterford have brought in a really good American, Jade Compton. She and Allery Mays as well has come up from Division 1, and the two of them have really slotted in. They have some good Irish internationals, and I think they'll give Colester a good run for their money. But it's a big weekend for Colester, obviously, because they have 2 teams in the final.
Yeah.
They've already had a fantastic season up to now. And they have an unbelievable starting 5 and some of the best players in the country playing for them. So it should be a great spectacle. It should be a fantastic game. You know, Waterford have lost twice to Colester in the season, but the last game was an 8-point loss, and they were really good that night. So it'll be a close game, you know, and I hope for TV and all that it's an excellent spectacle.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to hear now from 2 players involved, Colester's Claire Melia and Waterford's Helena Rowan.
Hiya, it's great for the club, especially having the 2 teams in it, and after winning the league as well, it's great for the likes of Mimi and Mark and everyone just to be in another final.
Of course, you're very familiar as an international, the National Basketball Arena, but all these players, you know, they're familiar environments, so there's no real added edge there or advantage, is there?
No, there's players on both teams that have played in the arena many times, so again, it's just another day. We'll see what happens and what drops and what doesn't.
And what would it mean to you? You've obviously tasted treble success with Glanmire a number of years ago. To win a double here with Colester would be quite the feat.
Oh yeah, it'd be great. Like, it'd be great for the club, and it'd be great for Mick, the sponsor, and Helen. Like, it's such a family club, and there's great support up there, so it'd be great for them to get the win.
You know, the last few years we've had some great games against each other, so we're quite familiar with each other, so it'll be all to play for really on Sunday.
And do you think they go into it as favourites, you know, nationally as champions of the Super League, you know, and they're looking to do the double?
Yeah, of course. I think I'd say there's very few that will put us as favourites, but you know what, we won't mind that.
And what would it mean to you to take home silverware come Sunday?
Personally, it would just, honestly, as cliche as it would sound, it'd be a dream come true. It's a long, long time. I think it's over 20 years since the club has won a trophy, so it would be fantastic. And for the club, it would mean the world.
So that is the misquote.ie Champions Trophy final. And we also have the men's final this weekend, the insuremyvan.ie Super League final. And it's going to be Griffith College Aina against Priabel Colester. Mark, no doubt it would be a huge day if Colester were able to do the double. But will Aina have a say in this, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. They're the form team, you know. They haven't lost. I could be wrong on this, but I think they haven't lost for 10 games now. They've come in with really good pedigree. You know, they knocked off some of the better teams and some of the form teams. They beat Marie, they beat Galway, and they beat Star over the last few weeks. So they're coming in with an awful lot of confidence. And you know what? They're playing well at the right time. But then again, so are Colester. It's a very, very interesting matchup, you know. Both of those teams have just hit form at the right time. And the way the league is formatted now with the playoffs, you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about, like, reaching your peak, you know, at this time of the year. And I think both of those teams are are the top teams in the league at this present moment.
Okay, we're going to hear now from Aina's Nathan Comerford and Colchester's Troy Simon.
We've played them twice already this year and we lost both. So going into this game, we're kind of the underdogs, but we've been going really well the last few weeks. We've been training really hard. The team's doing really well together. Everyone's playing as a real team at the moment. So we're going to go out and it's going to be a very good game and hopefully we can go and get a win.
The final's on TG Carr, you know, it's on national TV. It must be very big for the players. It's important for the sport too, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be huge for the club to have our game on TG Carr, but for the sport as well. It really shows the growth of basketball over the last few years and the path basketball's taken and how it's going to continue to grow. So it's great for the whole community. Yeah.
And ultimately, you want to pick up silverware at the end of the day. You know, what would it mean as a club to lift that trophy?
Well, it would be huge for Aina because we've been to 3 finals in the past 3 years. This is our 3rd, and we've lost the previous 2. We haven't been able to get over the hump, so to win this one for the whole club, it would be huge. It would be a great achievement.
Troy, I guess you know Aina and very well. How do you get that advantage when it comes into a big final? You've obviously beaten them twice already this season, but you know, to make that the magic 3 would be a big one.
It's hard to beat a team 3 times in a row because you know they're going to make some adjustments and maneuvers to try to slow us down. But we just got to go out there, just play our game, play deep. Defense and the defense going to create for our offense.
And for you personally, you know, come over to Ireland and to play in this marquee final, that must be pretty big for you too.
Yeah, man. I just gotta say thank you to Coach Johnny and my teammate Kaysen for getting me over here, letting me be a part of the team, and hopefully we go out there and win.
So that was Nathan Comerford and Troy Simon. So Mark, call the 2 for me.
Jesus, hard. I think Colchester might just get over the line in the women's, you know, because I just think they have that experience. But, you know, Sarah Hickey and Kate Hickey with water for some of the younger girls, I think they'll have a big say on the day. And I think in the men's, you know, like Johnny Grinnell and Mark Grinnell, 2 brothers coaching in 2 finals on the day. I just think it could be Colchester's day, but it's very hard to call. Aina will have a big say in it. I think the crowd and the atmosphere and the fact that it'll be orange in the arena on Sunday might just get it done for Colchester.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah,
as always, for talking to us, Mark. And I'd say it sounds like it's going to be a great day of basketball out in the arena. Before we finish up, we're going to cross back over to Greg Allen, who's at Augusta. So, Greg, what's happened since we spoke to you last?
Well, loads of sparks at the top of the leaderboard. Ryan Fox has just eagled the 8th hole to go to 5 under par on the front 9. He's the one-shot leader over Eric Van Rooyen of South Africa, who's just birdied the 13th to go to 4 under par. And then on 3 under par, Torbjørn Olesen of Denmark and Ben Ahn of Korea. But Rory McIlroy has bogeyed the 2nd hole, and that's a really bad bogey because it's statistically mostly the easiest golf hole on the course. Hit it into trees off the tee, sprayed it 40 yards offline, and that was after playing the 1st hole very solidly, where he had a 10-foot putt for birdie that just missed. And then on the 2nd, he sprayed it into the trees, and it's cost him a bogey on really what is a birdie hole. So he's 1 over after 2. Scottie Scheffler birdied that 2nd hole, 1 under after 2, as you'd expect of the world number 1, just playing so solidly. John Rahm, level after 2, the defending champion. Xander Schauffele playing with Rory, and Scheffler bogeyed the 1st, and he's 1 over after 2. But the man at the top of the leaderboard, Ryan Fox of New Zealand, 5 under par, leads by 1 from Eric Van Rooyen. And people might remember, Fox was the runner-up in the playoff for the Irish Open in 2018 in Ballyliffin in County Donegal. A very popular player, and he's going great guns here. 5 under after 8, the leader by 1. Shane Lowry will be teeing off just before 8 o'clock in just around an hour's time.
Fantastic. Greg, thank you so much. I won't be here tomorrow, but Shane will be chatting to Greg at the Masters. That is all we have time for this evening.